Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Bill Vita, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Education. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Bill, can you tell us a bit more about the IT strategy at the Department of Education? How have you sought to modernize and standardize the use of technology so it benefits both the department and the constituents that you serve, as well as align IT resources to the department's strategic plan?
Well, it really gets back to those three promises that I was telling you about. The first one, to try to make IT as efficient and cost-effective as possible, isn't just a challenge for OCIO. It's really a business challenge. And one of the first things that I looked at was how technology was being procured, how it was being used, who was making the decisions, and how all of those things were working already within the department. Because many of the decisions that the president's forwarded through his policies with market-based government, many of the things that education had already been doing reaffirmed that everything that the department could possibly do to put the greatest possible investment on the educational priorities needed to remain, and that IT as a mission enabler and needed to be much, much more efficient. Based on that assumption, we went out and took a look at, were there economies of scale? Was there a different enterprise view? Were there newer technologies available that might provide those efficiencies? Were there other things that we were doing that were less than optimal? And we partnered with a number of different organizations to do that, with our contracting and acquisition people, with all of our business program managers, with our Office of Inspector General, to really try to get everything out on the table all at once. That resulted in a number of different recommendations that we've been driving towards since. Prior to my arrival, the department had already chosen to use vendor partners to deliver most of the operational IT every day. And so the way we had been doing it was, we as government owned most of the assets, and we had enlisted partners from industry to operate them for us. For everybody who's ever worked with government who knows, the process of provisioning, acquiring, maintaining all of the licenses, all of the hardware, all of the spare parts, all of the things necessary to deliver the operational services is no small feat in and of itself. And so we decided that rather than having multiple different organizations involved in trying to choreograph everything we needed to get the kind of performance and reliability and quality and services we were looking for, we needed to come up with a different way, strategically different way of providing IT in the department. So we use an acronym called GOCO, Government-Owned Contractor Operated, that kind of described where we were at. We said, if we're going to optimize this, we need to provide the vendors who are ultimately responsible for the services with as much flexibility as possible to make choices within the confines of law and within the confines of all of the management guidance from OMB and from the department that we establish, from NIST for security, from everything else, that they would have to conform with all those things. But to the extent possible that we could give them flexibility to provision more effectively, we would do that. So we went from this GOCO model to something we called COCO, contractor-owned, contractor-operated. So if they need something to provide 99.9% reliable telephone service, if they need to provide 99.9% reliable printer service, that they would have the option of deciding the most effective way to do that. And that significantly shifted risk burden from government onto our vendor partners by design. But from their perspective, it significantly lowered the risk burden of government being able to provide the kind of things they needed to get the job done as they'd agreed to under their contract. So we started that, like I said, shortly after I came on board, September maybe of 2006. We've recently awarded the contract this fall. We've selected a vendor partner, Pro Systems Corporation. They've been on board now about 3 months, so we're starting to get the data in, but everything points to we're accomplishing the goals we set out to accomplish.
Now, this may sound a bit loaded, but it's been my experience that information technology is an area that is sometimes noted for its turf battles and its proprietary views. So could you elaborate on your efforts to foster an enterprise view and begin to break down these barriers?
Absolutely. And I would say that's not a challenge unique to the Department of Education. Some of it really comes kind of back down to basic empirical data. There's volume issues that you can take advantage of. There are licensing strategies that you can take advantage of when you look at things with a broader enterprise view rather than from an individual user view or an individual office view. But it fundamentally for us came down to also discussion really about what was fostering this just beyond parochial interest. And if you look at the operational timelines of most departments, departments, contrary to agencies, have a lot more political appointees, a lot more kind of Schedule C staff than what a typical agency does. In that context, when you're promising the administration and the president that you're going to do a good job for them, you plan on that within the term of an administration. And when you account for the time that it takes to spin up and understand a culture and how to get things done within a particular organization and maybe the time it takes to spin out, you've got an effective operating window of 3 to 3.5 years to try to get anything done, any mission done that you've been assigned or promised that you'd do. And if the IT people come in at that point and say, well, we're going to take 11 months to do a requirements analysis, and maybe by the time we get done with that requirements analysis, we're going to get a better handle on what the contract we're going to need to write is going to look like. And in the meantime, we can work on the budget requirements and make sure that we're aligned properly with something that happened 2 years ago before anybody showed up that matches what our program goals are. You've already blown by 364 days and 7 hours and probably 1 minute the amount of time that they wanted to focus on building a relationship with you and what it takes to solve the problems they've got. You get to a point very quickly where you can understand why people have very strong parochial views, why they want to have very strong control over the technology, and why they're very impatient trying to figure out how to deliver it. And so we recognized that early on, and there was a lot of very senior level discussion. Very little of that first is unique to the department, and very little of that is really something that's changeable because of all these external drives. But we wanted to make sure that we made investments in technology that absolutely shortened that cycle and that over time would make use of this common infrastructure a more desirable choice to folks coming in. And beyond that, once we have confidence that it's a credible alternative to everybody going ahead and going their own way, then you can start looking at things like where you might make more parts of that mandatory versus discretionary for different people who want to use it. We're 3 months into it. It's not something that's a new experiment for government. There are a number of different state, federal, and local organizations that have chosen to use this model, and they're using it very successfully. And as a department with perhaps scale being a positive factor in this regard, hopefully we've got better command and control of our domain and we'll be able to get the job done.
So the path that you described earlier, moving to the contractor owned and operated environment, is a trend that has been going on for a while in private sector. To what degree do you think the federal government will increasingly consider that approach?
I think it's going to be organization by organization decision making. Clearly, there are organizations in government that have a mission to be responsible for developing technology. And as a core part of their mission, I don't think you would see any movement away from that. But I think you're going to see a lot more business decision type investment decisions coming down the pipe. Again, I used the term mission enabler earlier in describing IT. And for those organizations that are looking to optimize that, this is clearly going to be a legitimate option. And I think no doubt you'll see more organizations considering it as we move forward.
Your department's information capital investment portfolio is in the range of $540 million. Would you elaborate a little on how you have strengthened the department's process to assure this investment decisions are mission-aligned and cost-justified?
Absolutely. We're very fortunate to have a very active chief operations officer in our department, Hudson LaForce, who's taken a lot of personal responsibility along with all of the senior leadership team for making sure that we establish a governance process that allows us to make the best apples-to-apples kind of decisions, not only for technology but for the way we invest in different programs and implementing the intentions of Congress as our appropriations come to us. What that means for the OCIO is for any area where technology is required to get the mission done, we formed a body where we bring together all of the business program managers responsible for the outcome of those programs with the technologists, with the budget and acquisition people, with the other policymakers to make sure that we reconcile up front investment decisions and investment expectations as we move forward. Again, this reflects a lot of the things that you've seen coming out of OMB, a lot of the policy on performance-based views of managing organizations and outcomes that I believe is ultimately being very well adopted across all the federal government. Ultimately, it comes down to, at the end of the day, making sure you're making the right decisions to solve the problems that you have. And technology is not typically the focus of the problems. It's really more the enabler. So it really gets back to the common theme of making sure you're making the most efficient decisions, the most efficient investments, and that the technology you're implementing matches those.
Bill, can you tell us a little bit about the Education Data Exchange Network, or EDEN, and how does this information create standards and inform local and state education CIOs?
Well, the department's Education Data Exchange Network is a performance-based data management initiative that's been a collaborative effort among the department, state educational agencies, and industry partners to establish a process for states to directly submit elementary and secondary education data from the state, district, and school levels to the department by electronic means. Started funding for it was 2003. It was operational by 2004. And this initiative has built a currently operational central repository that consolidates K through 12 information collected from states, districts, and schools. Through EDEN, the department's improving data quality and reducing the paperwork burden for state and local education partners. And through its data collections, EDEN collects and manages the following types of data: achievement, performance statistics, school characteristics, demographics, and program financial data. There's actually a tremendous body of information available on EDEN through the www.ed.gov website. I think rather than trying to represent all of that today, I'd suggest to anybody who's interested that they visit our website and find out for themselves.
Great. So shifting gears a bit, Bill, and perhaps delving down a bit deeper, IT appliances are designed to simplify the IT manager's life, but it's recognized that each new device introduced into a data center can add a certain amount of managerial complexity to the work of probably an already overburdened staff. Could you elaborate on your perspective of whether having too many of these single-purpose IT devices leads to complexity as opposed to simplicity?
Gladly, but I'd point out that under a contractor-owned, contractor-operated model, it's not the technical infrastructure that we worry about. It's the performance outcome that we worry about. So when you go to a COCO model, those are burdens that are borne exclusively on the vendor partner and really not so much on the government partner. Certainly, we have oversight that we have to provide to make sure that people are complying with all of the different laws and regulations and things we live under in the federal government. But to that end, and when you go to a COCO model, whether there are 30 email servers or one email server, that's really an investment decision on the part of the service provider and not so much on the part of government. I would suspect that what they would tell you, and you can certainly see the trends in industry, that virtualization, consolidation, making the footprint smaller and using more advanced management technology is definitely the way the operators are choosing to go. It requires less salary, and ultimately it reduces the complexity. So I would say absolutely I would expect to see vendor partners continue to take advantage of technology improvements and advancements. And it certainly would reduce the complexity over time to have fewer devices rather than more.
So as we talked about earlier, migrating to the COCO model really helps begin to alleviate from the government's perspective a lot of these concerns.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely key for CIOs. When you really start focusing on problem solving, it's not an issue of technology problem solving. It's an issue of business problem solving. And I had a good opportunity to chat with peers about this the other day. And it was raised that CIOs who approach the job with purely a technology problem-solving view will end up being the directors of information resource management. And if there's a technical problem, they'll be the ones getting the call in the middle of the night to make sure that the list servers are up and running, for example, and that the firewalls are operating like they're supposed to be. But to be a chief information officer really means to be a business problem solver. And if you want a seat at the table – whether you're working with an agency or whether you're working with a secretary, you'll get a chance to sit at the table by virtue of your contribution, not by virtue of your title. And I think fundamentally that's what it's all about.
Good perspective. What steps has the U.S. Department of Education taken to strengthen its IT security? We will ask Bill Vita, Chief Information Officer at the U.S. Department of Education, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.